Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Get ready to be the best you can be. Stay tuned for the Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules.
Well, hello. Hello, hello. I hope I'm on because I've been having a whole bunch of difficulties, but I believe I have Lisa on the line too. Lisa, can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly. I have been sitting here completely unpanicked while you ran around like a crazy woman.
Yeah, I'm running like, oh my gosh, I can't get on my computer.
Because I can hear everything just fine.
Oh, good. Okay, well, we're live.
So excellent.
And good evening to everybody. Welcome to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Let me just catch my breath. This is so much fun here. You know.
Well, and see, when you say you're the Law of Attraction Radio, then you have to wonder.
Yeah.
Cause this?
I know it. I attracted it, but...
You know what? I think it was me, actually. I was having very bad vibes and was trying to get myself in a better mood. So it's probably my fault. I'm over it.
Well, no, I'm not going to blame you. I just think I wasn't quite as prepared as I should have been, and I should have started earlier. So it's always fine. It works out perfectly, and we're online. Just made it by seconds.
And, you know, I always say I'm always the last minute, and then it always works out, and so I never learn the lesson, and I finally decided that is the lesson.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I was telling everybody about this show tonight, and I'm saying, all right, get ready. We're going to have some fun. And you know what? It started off with a bang. Let me just give some fast announcements, and I want to tell everybody about you, too, so let's kind of start over from the beginning, and I just lost my show, and I know we're going, so as I keep on trying to come back, I want to let everybody know that tonight we have Lisa Earle McLeod with us to talk about her book, Finding Grace When You Can't Even Find Clean Underwear. And we should probably say we can't find the Internet Explorer tonight either because it just went down, but I'm still live. Okay. And you have probably read her syndicated columns from Los Angeles to New York to Atlanta because she is well known for finding humor in the most bizarre situations, right?
Well, everything from world peace to TV, religion, sex, fast food, that's my beat.
Okay, all right. Well, then
Dave Barry says boogers are his beat. I say sex and fast food and religion are mine.
Okay. Great. Well, let me just do a couple of small announcements. I was supposed to do a commercial break, but I can't see anything, so I'm just going to have to hold off until later to do that.
Oh, no sponsors. Radio Death.
I'll do that during the half an hour. But I also wanted to mention real fast about our guest for next week, who is Mary Lee LeBay, wellness expert and author of the popular book Hypnotherapy, which is one of my favorite subjects. She leads sold-out workshops in the U.S., India, Europe, Great Britain, and she's a teacher and a practitioner of hypnosis and alternative therapies. So it's going to be a great show, so tune into that. And I also wanted to mention some other terrific guests that's coming up. I don't know if people have heard of Mr. Timothy Freaky. He's on my host page. I have a video on him. He is the guy that actually inspired Dan Brown. He's the guy that wrote the Da Vinci Code. And so he's inspired Dan Brown to write the book. So, you know, talk about a fantastic show because we're absolutely going to find out some very, very interesting things that we haven't heard before.
Oh, I'm going to listen into that one because I'm convinced that the Da Vinci Code is not a novel.
Yes,
it's true.
Yeah, and this guy has all of the answers that Dan went to get, you know, so it's like, okay, we're going to have some fun here. It's really going to be interesting. And then after that, we got Matthew James, who's coming in from Hawaii and talking about Huna and the Hawaiian art of forgiveness and Ho'oponopono. And I can't say that word, forgive me, but it really means so a lot of good stuff, ancient Hawaiian history and everything. So, and, of course, Abraham is coming back on for 2 hours to broadcast and is personally going to answer questions, so it's a great time to call in. And also I want to mention real fast, by popular demand, we are going to do another collective consciousness meditation in November. It's been requested since we did such a great job out there, listeners, about the rain that we created in the outback of Australia. We're going to bring some rain to the beautiful state of Georgia. So we're going to do this fast and furious. The special broadcast is going to be on Wednesday, November 7th at 6 p.m. California time, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I will be posting that all over, and everybody just tune in and let's bring some rain to that drought-ridden state.
Well, that's where I live, in Atlanta.
All right.
So I've been dancing out on the lawn. Not a doggone thing's happened, except the neighbors think I'm a nut. So good. Just try another plan.
Well, that, you know what? We did it for the outback, and within 27 hours, the first drops were felt, and it rained solid for 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Well, there's another. If you guys are really good at this, I was actually having a business discussion with my husband about his business, and it's not going really well, so I could use a little positive meditation on that, too.
Well, now that you mention that, we are having a financial abundance meditation, too, and that's coming up in November, so I'll be telling everybody about that.
Yeah, say Bob McLeod, Signal Signs in Mapleton, Georgia, financial abundance, send it.
Well, we do that, you know, we do it. It's really great because we send love, we raise up our vibrations, and it's just amazing. The last time we had the financial prosperity one, I had just so many emails on fantastic things that happened to them. It was just unbelievable. I'm going to start sharing those stories next week, but it really does work.
Okay, sign us up. We're in.
Okay. Sounds good. And then, of course, in December, we're going to have a world peace meditation because it's the holidays and everything, and it's a special focus on the Middle East. So if for people who think they can't make a difference in the world, join us, and you will see for yourself and you will feel for yourself the difference that you can make through the science of collective consciousness.
Well, we need to talk about this because, you know, I've done a lot of work for the Peace Alliance.
Ah.
And I have a better short-term strategy. Not better, let me rephrase that, but a more immediate short-term, more earthly-bound strategy for world peace.
Oh, really? What's that?
Every woman in the world should decide that peace is sexy.
Okay.
Because the whole reason that men do what they do is because they think that we're impressed with them. And so if all of a sudden we started getting all hot and bothered by the guy with the white robe and the trained dove, all male behavior would change overnight. I'm telling you, this is not something I just came up with out of the blue. I tried this out on a bunch of military guys. I've tried this out on people from other countries. And every man I know, including my father, who was a Navy veteran, and my brother, who's a former Army Ranger, believes that if all women said, you know what, we get world peace, all men get more sex all the time, we don't get world peace, there's going to be no sex. All men have told me from many cultures that this would work.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
It's so simple. It's so economical.
Well, okay. So how do we go and do this?
Well, I think we need to use the Internet because we're all going to have to get a pact. And, you know, there was Las Estrada or something, a Greek play about this several thousands of years ago that apparently all the women did this. And I don't know if it was true or not. I think it was just a Greek play. But we got to get an Internet campaign going. You know how you always get those, pass this on to your congressman, or look at this funny joke?
Yeah.
We got to get a big Internet campaign going. We got to get all the women to agree. Because if a couple women crack, it's not going to work.
Well, that's true. That's true. Do you think we could get some of the world leaders to the women involved with them?
You know what? I think that we could. And those are the people that we have to get to. And so it's not the women world leaders, because they could already do this thing if they wanted.
Right.
It's the wives of the male world leaders. I mean, can you imagine, if we got Laura Bush on board with this, I mean, she might be on this reading campaign or some literacy thing, but I mean, imagine if we get her on this, what's going to happen?
Oh, wow, what if we got Hillary Clinton? She would be like the world famous.
Well, I don't want, I think she may already be doing this strategy, and I don't know that, I don't want to cast aspersions on a high-powered woman, because God love her, but I don't know that this strategy worked very well for her of withholding, so.
Yeah, you're right.
So I think maybe we should, so let's think Laura Bush, okay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, just imagine it. I mean, you know, people have chided Laura Bush for not taking a more proactive role in public policy, and this could be the chance. This could be her legacy if she could get on board with this.
Gee, okay, ladies. Let's go. I'm
throwing down the garter belt. It's time to go.
All righty. That sounds good to me. We'll start something going here, that's for sure.
Well, you know, it's funny. I have been talking about this for a while, and I've actually written about it, about what would happen if peace was sexy. And I joke about it a lot, but there is actually a serious undercurrent to this, because what happens is we have this hero worship culture,
uh-huh.
and that's part of what drives wars,
uh-huh.
is this hero worship culture. And so I was at this big event one time, and there were all these really noted speakers there. Marianne Williamson was there and a couple other people. And I was supposed to speak. And, you know, I'm not going to be more inspirational than Marianne Williamson. I'd prepared a bunch of remarks, and I thought, oh, I'm really going to inspire these people. And I'm like, oh, yeah, right. So then it was all about peace, because it was this big fundraiser for the Peace Alliance, which is trying to create this United States Department of Peace, which do you know about that?
No.
Oh, okay, well, we'll talk about that in a second. But we were trying to create this United States Department of Peace, and so all these inspirational speakers have talked about the spirituality of it, and loving each other, and lifting our lives up in meditation, and all the, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And so then some policy people talk about the sound public policy, and I'm like, what am I going to say? So I go up there, and it's one of those times when the words are sort of coming out of your mouth, and you're watching yourself, and you're going, who's talking? Oh, my God, it's me. And so there's a couple hundred people there, and so I start talking, and I say, you know what, I think that we should all make peace sexy. If every woman alive decided that peace was sexy, we let the men be the heroes for creating peace, the world would change, and I'm on a roll, and I just think this is hilarious. And then I look out, and a number of people are, in fact, laughing, but I realize that there are probably about 20% of the crowd are lesbians. And so I think, dang, this is not going to work. So the words are just coming out of my mouth, and I'm looking around the room. And did I mention there was a congressman there? And I'm looking around the room, and I say, you know, I realize that there are a bunch of you women out there that don't fancy men on a regular basis. But on this issue, I think we all need to come together, and you need to take one for the team. And I'm just sort of having this out-of-body experience, thinking, you just said that in front of a United States congressman. And
why?
Let me tell you how the universe responded to that.
Okay,
so everybody laughs, and I'm kind of thinking, I don't know if I should have said that. But, you know, everybody laughs, and we go on, and other, you know, Marianne comes up and does her thing and everything. Well, afterwards, I felt like, and I guess this was kind of okay, but, I, you know, I wonder if people are going to go away and go, who was that chick talking about the lesbians? We love her world peace. And this woman comes up to me afterwards. This is probably, I would say one of the most significant moments of my entire life. The most significant moment of my entire career. This woman comes up to me and says, my name is Betsy Bombeck. Irma Bombeck was my mother. I'm a lesbian, and that was the funniest damn thing I've ever heard. So I just looked up at the heavens and went, I got it, baby. This is my path. Could the universe have validated it more?
Oh, what a sign, what a sign.
And I was like, I'm good to go.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I mean, talk about the law of attraction.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually said that you are channeling her mother.
That's what she said that day. And so she said, I mean, it was, I had thought about her mother a lot, and I was clearly, if, for those listeners that aren't familiar with Irma Bombeck, if you are a woman of a certain age, if you're over 35, you've probably heard of her because your mother read her or you read her yourself. And I actually did a book report on her when I was in the third grade.
Really?
And I did a book report on The Grass Is Always Greener over the septic tank. And so I go in and do this book report, and I just think this is the funniest book ever. I have chosen to ignore all these suggested books for the teacher gave us and get this book out of my mother's room. And so I've read it, and I think it's hilarious. And I'm, you know, like 8 years old at the time. And so I go in and I give this book report about how, oh, it's really funny. She makes fun of all the dumb stuff that your mother does, and you know how you burp the plastic and you scream at your kids and just how dumb all the mothers are, and it's really funny. And so I didn't quite capture the true essence of the supportive humor, you know, that she was writing. And so I got a C on the book report, which was, for me, pretty much what I got all the time because I wasn't a very good student. And so it was another example, sort of a theme of my school years was not working up to potential. I'm doing little quotes around this right now. And so she sends a note home to my mother that I might want to consider more appropriate reading material. But it stuck with me. It stuck with me all these years. And I didn't actually become a writer until I was in my mid-30s. And I remember just thinking about Irma Bombeck, who had passed away by then, and just thinking about what she did for people. And at that time, I was fairly conflicted spiritually. And so I thought, well, I'm not sure I'll believe in God or not. I'll just pray to her. That sounded pretty good.
Why not?
Why not? And so I did when I was writing, and I really said, you know, help me with this. Help me. It's a different time. It's a different place. But help me with this. Do this sort of laugh at yourself humor the way that you did this. And, you know, it was, again, a different time and place. I didn't want to copy her, but I wanted to capture some of that same feeling. And so I remember just thinking that and praying to her. And then flash forward 5 or 6 years, and I'm speaking at this peace conference, which, by the way, I agreed to speak at. My friend had this friend of mine, Terry Mansfield, who's in Phoenix, Arizona, who heads up the Department of Peace efforts there, asked me, and I had sworn I was not going to do any more free speeches. I'm not doing any more free speeches. And so Terry starts asking me, well, can you come speak at this big conference we're having? We can't pay you. And the words, and I'm like, the words are coming out of my mouth. Sure, I'd love to come, Terry. And I'm going, who said that? And then she goes, oh, and we can't pay for your plane ticket either. So it's going to cost you money. But you can stay at my house. I'm like, oh, sure, world peace, okay. Sure, I'll come. 3 days, pay my own place, sure, I'll come. So then I go, and I give the speech, and then I meet Betsy Bombeck, who comes up to me, and I'm thinking, well, I think I know what doing the right thing got for me.
Wow, that's neat. Well, tell me, you know, about your book, Finding Grace When You Can't Even Find Clean Underwear. I love that title.
Thank you.
What in the book you have all these questions like, why are people so fascinated and yet so blinking annoying?
And aren't they, though?
Yeah.
Just aren't they?
Yeah.
Nothing is more interesting than other people's problems, but nothing is more annoying than having to live with their angst. You know, aren't they? I was talking to my husband about all these people in our church, and I said, you know, I think I like talking about them better than I like actually being with them. But I wouldn't get any fodder for talking about them if I didn't go spend some time with them. But the book really was designed, it's for the ADD reader, written by the ADD writer, and it's organized around 23 questions. Like you said, everything from why are people so annoying to what is the meaning of life to is religion stealing our spirituality, which the answer to that, by the way, is yes, quite often it does. But I had written all these essays, and I thought, you know, I wanted to address the human condition and all the things that make us crazy. And I chose that title, Finding Grace When You Can't Even Find Clean Underwear, because I think that sums up what not only we want, but what we deserve in our lives. Because we all think there's going to be this moment where I'm going to get my house all organized, I'm going to get my bills all paid, I'm going to actually save 15% of my income, I'm going to get on a low-fat organic diet, I'm going to do all these things, I'm going to whiteboard my office and write all my goals on it. And that moment's going to come, and then I'm finally going to be happy. And for me, I mean, I've got two kids. I work. You know when I'm going to finally be caught up on all my to-dos? When I am like 95 drooling in a nursing home. And I'm probably still not going to be caught up. I'm just going to be so delusional I think I'm caught up. And so what I wanted to do was find a humorous way to help people address the angst and still capture the moments of grace in everyday life, because that is the only place that you will find grace. You may go visit the Dalai Lama. You may, like I said, get some great time management system. But the human condition, to really experience the human condition, is to master the ability to capture moments of grace within the chaos of daily life while the chaos is still there. And so that's what the book is about.
Wonderful.
And I'm probably, as far as taking my own advice, about at a 50-50.
But isn't that how we all are?
That in no way dilutes the validity of the advice. Well, that was one thing, quite honestly, that I noticed. I read a lot of books. I like to read a lot.
Uh-huh.
And I first started on my writing career. I actually have this one woman to thank for my writing career. Two women, and I was just talking about this the other day. One is Irma Bombeck, and she kind of showed me that humor was a valid way to be.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was not a good student. And I never understood that being funny was a marketable skill, but that she must have planted that idea somewhere in my head. But then the other woman who actually really launched my writing career, I don't know her name, and she doesn't know who I am, but I was at my neighbor's house,
uh-huh.
And it was at Christmas time, and my neighbor had all these Christmas cards on her counter, and one of them was this letter. And so she had it out, and she goes, "Oh, gosh, read this." So I read the letter, and it's one of those letters, the perfect letters. This year has been so fabulous. Bill got promoted to executive vice president, and what with all the money we're making now, we just decided to take the whole family to Italy for 2 weeks. Of course, it was a challenge because Bill Jr., you know, couldn't miss the debate club practice, being the president and all. But what with his stellar grade point average and all his hard work on the football team as star quarterback at the state championship team, they thought it was okay for me. I mean, just on and on. And just, what? So I read this letter, and they have pictures, and they look like a toothpaste commercial in these pictures. And so I'm reading this, and I'm just like, you got to be kidding me. Who are these people? This is why people hate these letters. And so I'm sitting there in the kitchen, and at this time I'm working as a sales trainer. I have my own business, and I'm working as a sales trainer. And I was kind of known as the funny sales trainer, if there is such a thing. But so I'm doing that for a living. And so I read this thing, and I go, you know what? I could do better than this. I could write a really funny Christmas letter. So I go home. I did have a computer at that time. Get out my computer, and I say, I'm going to write a letter about what really happened this year. And so I write this letter, and it's like 1999 or something. And I go, 1999, otherwise known as the year of the head lice. And so I write this letter somehow my kids got head lice at swim team, and then they got it again, and then we went to this hotel, and they had it at this hotel. And then we got these ants, and then this exterminator wouldn't come back because he said we were leaving too much food around, and I'm not coming back if I see those pizza boxes out one more time. So I write this letter, and I send it out. And all these people start calling me, because I had to sit down to be, 125 people. And all these people start calling me and saying, well, this is just really, really funny. And so I'm really proud of myself. So I do this letter for 2 or 3 years in a row. Meanwhile, I'm still a sales trainer. And people just keep saying, this is so funny. Oh, I've given it to my friends. And then I have a couple people call and say, could you send me two? Because I want to give it to my parents because it's really funny. And so then, fortunately, I did not know anyone in the publishing business. Because I get this idea, I've written like 3 really funny Christmas letters, and I go, well, you know what? I should just write a book. That's what I should do. Because I've written 3 good Christmas letters. So Lord knows that's reason enough to think I should write a book. And so I'm here have any clue what I'm doing, and I just sit there in my office, and I just start writing this book. And I had been doing all this sales training for all these people. And one of the things I noticed was all these women in particular, and these were like the women that have the good jobs. You know, I mean, you got a pretty good job if your company sends you to an out-of-town seminar. And so I would go out to dinner with them at night, and they would all talk about, oh, I'm not good enough at this. Oh, I'm failing as a wife. I'm failing as a mother. Oh, I'm not good enough at work. And they're beating themselves up all the time. And so then I thought back to that one Christmas letter and how that had made me feel. And so that's where I came up with the concept for my first book, which was Forget Perfect. And so I wrote that book and actually ended up getting it published by a major publisher. I mean, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I'm just writing this book thinking, well, when I'm done with this thing, I'm just going to send it to Random House. They're just going to send me a big fat check. I guess that's how it works. And if anyone's listening, it doesn't really work that way. Much to my chagrin.
Darn.
But I took a class and how to get a book published and learned how to do a query letter and a book proposal and get an agent and all that. So it took a while. But I eventually got that book published, and then that led to the newspaper column, and the newspaper column was where I started tackling other subjects, like this sort of this angst of human spirit, as I call it.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that's what we all struggle with, is we want our lives to look a certain way, and we think when we get them to look this way that they'll feel better, and we're sort of out of order. We have to feel better first.
Right.
But that's harder.
So you actually help people to feel better by laughing and releasing everything.
Well, that's one of the goals. Because the other thing I realized, and I realized this years ago, I read a study when I was a sales trainer, and it was about how two things, laughter and storytelling, will help people learn better. Mm-hmm. And if you're laughing, the little receptors in your brain are a little more open. And storytelling is how people remember things. And we've seen that in all the religious traditions all use storytelling to teach the lessons. And so I, for years in my sales training, would tell these funny stories, usually on myself, about some stupid sales mistake I had made. And that really helped people remember sort of what not to do, rather than getting up there and going, don't talk about your product too early and bore the customer out of their mind. I would tell some funny, usually exaggerated story about some stupid thing that I or one of my sales reps had done, and there was no shortage of material, and then everybody would remember. You know, oh, don't be like the guy who, you know, caught his tie in the copy machine because he was so busy talking about himself that he didn't even notice the customer, you know. And so I started doing that, and so then I realized that that was the best way to write a book and to do this humor column. And sometimes they're just funny, or I think they're funny. Sometimes they're just straight humor. But usually I'll try and bury some lesson in there, because there's really two ways to be funny. You can be funny about making fun of other people, which I don't like to do. I very, very rarely do that unless someone just really, really has it coming. But the other way to be funny is by bringing up truisms of the human condition that usually you have experienced or your family has experienced or that you've observed in business. And so you bring up these truisms of the human condition, put this funny slant on it, and that helps people realize how ridiculous we are.
Oh, yeah.
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 Which is the whole, why are other people so fascinating and so annoying? Yeah, because they're just as ridiculous as you are. Only their ridiculousness bugs the living daylights out of you.
Oh, this is great. This is great. See, this is exactly what I needed to do, is come up with all of this release that you're providing me after not being able to start the show on time. So this is like perfect for
me. Yeah, don't take yourself that seriously. People weren't about to jump off a cliff, okay? Oh, my God, the law of attraction's not on the minute. What am I going to do? I can't live another day.
And I did it to myself.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Well, we all do it to ourselves.
Yeah.
We all do it to ourselves. I mean, that was one of, I wrote this essay about this. My sister and I were on the internet, and she found this website called despair.com.
Ooh.
I swear to gosh, this is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. says, here I am, I'm bugging somebody else's website, but this thing is hilarious. And you know all those motivational posters and all,
yeah,
where they'll show like the guys rowing, teamwork, the essence of everything we do,
uh-huh,
you know, oh, you know, integrity, our core value, you know, those stupid posters. I also, as years as a consultant, I have generally observed that the more posters a company has lining their walls, the more ineffective they are. But that's a whole other story. But anyhow, so my sister finds this website, despair.com, that has like the opposite of those posters.
Really?
And they're hilarious. And my favorite one that I found, and we just howled over it, was this one with this guy sitting on his park bench, and he's got his head all down, and there's no grass around. It's kind of dirty. He's got his head hanging down between his legs with his arms over to the side. And the caption is, "The common denominator in all your failed relationships is you." And we just laughed and laughed and just, we were so awful. We went through a list of like 10 people we wanted to send it to, you know? And oh, so-and-so should get it. Oh, so-and-so. But then here's the worst part. Okay, so we go through this whole list of people that we should send this poster to, just laughing, because, of course, it doesn't apply to us. And then about a week later, I was down in Tampa, Florida. And I was out touring on the first book. And, you know, John Grisham, when he tours on his book, he gets like a limo and an escort.
Uh-huh.
I'm out touring on my book. I'm like in this Ford, you know, escort, you know, but with no air conditioning in Florida, by myself, trying to find this, you know, TV show that I'm going to get on at like 5 in the morning, you know, on WFL, nobody watches, whatever. So I'm going to this TV show, and I've been doing all this by myself, and I've got the map, and da 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 da. And this is like 5 or 6 years ago, and I don't think Yahoo Maps or Google Maps were quite as good like they are now.
Uh-huh.
So I had gotten directions from all the people.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm on my cell phone. It's pouring buckets, and I'm talking to somebody, and I'm like, oh, I'm late, and I'm lost again. And by the way, just as a listener note, people don't like it when you're late for live TV shows. That makes a very bad impression on the producer. And so I'm late, and I'm talking on the phone. I call up one of my friends or my husband. I can't remember who it was. And I'm like, I can't believe it. Nobody in this city knows how to give decent directions. This is the third TV show where I have gotten directions from them, and I have been late and lost because no one here knows how to give decent directions. And 3 times in a row, and 3 different people have given me directions. And every time, and then all of a sudden the little light bulb goes on, they go, the common denominator in all these situations. And so I go, oh, my God, it's me. So then I got to thinking about it more, you know, about this hilarious poster. And one of the people that we were debating to send this poster to is actually a family member who always complains that other people are so controlling.
Uh-huh.
And that's their common complaint. Oh, so-and-so is so controlling. Oh, so-and-so is so controlling. Of course, it's lost on this person that maybe they're sort of real easy to control. And so it was really, so I'm thinking, oh, gosh, we got to send that to this person because they need to know that it's them. And so I start thinking about it, and I found myself saying, no one has ever, I have never in my life ever said so-and-so is so controlling. I have never experienced another person as controlling. And then it suddenly dawns on me, but how many people have said that about me?
Oh, no. Yeah.
It may be the reason I never think other people are controlling.
It's because they think you are.
It's because I'm always the one in charge.
Yeah, oh, my God. Yeah, that's right.
So I hate that when you have these really funny insights into human nature, and then you realize that they apply to you too.
Oh yes, that's law of attraction here.
Yeah, that's the bummer.
Yeah. Okay. Here, let's take a fast commercial break so I do not get in trouble by my wonderful sponsors.
Got to pay the bills. Everybody, listen. Buy whatever they're selling.
Yeah. Really, please. Hold on.
How is your life going? If you answered that question with anything less than the word fantastic, you may benefit from learning about universal law. These are the principles of nature existing to provide a roadmap through life. The book, Hidden Laws, Ultimate Tools for Divine Co-Creation, showcases six laws and how they work. Hidden Laws is now available at Amazon.com. For more information, I invite you to visit www.hiddenlaws.com.
Hi, this is Julie Johnson here to let you know about my favorite hypnosis session called Health, Wealth, and Well-Being. You know, this is so effective because it allows you to release old thought patterns by a simple weeding out process. Powerful suggestions of wealth and self-esteem are given to fill your subconscious so that you can become the health, wealth, and well-being magnet that is yours by divine right. This instant download is not only more cost-effective than a personal hypnosis session, it works better because you can replay it on a continual basis, rewiring the brain to accept new health and wealth attitudes. So visit lawofattractiontools.com hypnosis page for instant downloads and start creating your new life today. That's www.lawofattractiontools.com.
Mystic Pop Magazine has gone green. Now you get the same quality magazine only online. With lots of new features for subscribers like free downloadable radio interviews, lectures, music, and a new audio version. Read exclusive articles by Dr. Meg Beckren-Losi, Doreen Virtue, Gwyneth McCanns, and many more of your favorites. Now available anywhere on the planet, MysticPopMagazine.com.
Okay, we're back, and now, Lisa, I've got to ask you, what does Buddha need Botox for?
Okay.
I mean, what is the scoop behind that? I know it's in your book, but what tell us what that is all
okay,
about.
Okay, that is actually, does Buddha need Botox? It's actually, and you caught me, I was actually chewing. I shouldn't admit that, but I was eating my dinner. But does Buddha need Botox is about people, mostly women, losing their looks. And this is just a tragedy for us women. So let me kind of tee this up. My point is that oftentimes what seems like a cosmetic problem is actually a spiritual problem. But there was a study done, a global beauty study done by Dove, which resulted in their launching, you know, the Dove Real Women campaign. But one of the things that they discovered in this global study on beauty, only 2% of women said they were beautiful.
Ooh.
2%. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, that is the lowest number. So then I ask around, and I can't find anyone who says she's beautiful, so I'm not even sure who these 2% people are.
Really?
And so I've talked to a lot of women, and this is something I have certainly struggled with myself. And I am 44 now, and I look back at pictures of myself, especially in my 20s and somewhat in my 30s, and I think I should have spent an entire decade wearing a tube top and hot pants. I do not know. I look at these pictures of myself, and I think, what part of not good enough was I thinking?
Yeah.
What was I thinking?
Yeah.
I was drop-dead beautiful.
Yeah.
And in my case, I decided to cover it up. I worked in corporate, so I covered up one of those little mini-man suits, you know,
with
a blue striped suit with a little red bow tie. So attractive, pulling my hair back into a bun. And so what happened to me was, by the time I got the confidence in my sexuality, in my day-to-day life, to kind of want to strut my stuff wasn't too struttable anymore, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so I read this study, and it got huge publicity, but I actually requested the study, the whole study, this 2% figure got all this big publicity, and they launched this great ad campaign, which I think one of the best ad campaigns ever. But then I got the study. And I guess I'm the only, you know, journalist, humor writer of all things, that read the whole study, because buried in the very back of the study, I found another very interesting statistic. While only 2% of women say they look beautiful, 65% of women say they feel beautiful when they're doing something spiritual. And I never saw that figure out anywhere, and I wrote about that because I said, that tells us what the real problem is. Because if we don't think we look beautiful, that's because we're basing it on this sort of exterior thing. But women actually feel beautiful when they are doing something spiritual. But it's kind of funny because I think of all these shows, you know, like The Swan and The Bachelor and all, and I don't see any of those competitions around, let's see, who can hold the longest bow towards Mecca? Ah! I know, who can light the best menorah? Let's have a go at that competition. Look at her, Sylvia, she's a crackpot on the Johnny on the spot. Yeah. But it's so funny because one of the things that you'll see, just I've observed anecdotally in women in their 40s and in their 50s, especially if they have made a practice of taking care of themselves or started taking care of themselves as they age. Because for me, I never took care of myself in my 30s. I just lived on, you know, caffeine and M&Ms, and that was good enough.
Well, you don't need to in your 30s.
Well, I'm looking back and thinking it might have been nice if I did. I might have gone into my 40s with a little more energy. But I got to tell you that other thing about how I lost all my zing. But that was I got to tell you that in a second. But I see these women in their 40s and in their 50s who are taking good care of themselves, and they have a real beauty to them that very few women have in their 20s and 30s. And I think that is because they are connected to the essence of who they really are and connected to spirit. And whether they view it as a spiritual thing or a religious thing is probably irrelevant, because probably they view it as I'm connected to myself. Mm. And you see that in a lot of women. Because that's one thing I notice is in women in their 40s, 50s, 60s, beyond, there is a much bigger departure between women who have decided to sort of step up and embrace who they are and women who haven't. It shows in their bodies and their faces more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Like in the 30s, we all kind of look the same in a lot of ways. I mean, we don't look the same because there's different, you know, weights and coloring and things like that. But I definitely notice that sort of towards the end of the 30s, it takes – there are definitely two roads, and you can see the women who have decided to be comfortable with who they are and the women who aren't. It's very interesting.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And now your classification of spiritual, though, couldn't that be perceived as anything you feel good about doing?
Yeah, I was really glad to see that they framed the question up that way. Because the answer, it was a yes-no question. And the same thing with, I think I'm beautiful, was a yes-no question or a certain percentage of the time. So I feel beautiful when I'm doing something spiritual, and 65% of people answered yes. So we don't know what they're doing. For some people, it could have been running.
Yeah.
You know, listening to music or whatever. You know, it didn't say, I feel beautiful when I'm in church.
Oh, yeah, or cooking or whatever.
Yeah, it's just a spiritual practice of some sort. And people were, you know, I assume if you didn't have anything that made you feel spiritual, that you would have answered no.
Yeah.
To that.
Yeah, right.
But we were talking about how you don't have to take care of yourself in your 30s. And actually, you do.
Okay.
And I learned this the hard way. Okay, I went to go see this woman. And she was a tarot card reader, psychic, and skincare consultant. Skincare consultant.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you got to go see somebody when they got all those qualities.
Yeah. Really.
So I go see this woman, and I tell her, and I'm about 40 at the time that I go see her, and I tell her, well, you know, it's funny because I just used to be able to pull these all-nighters or catch these early morning flights and do these all-day seminars and stay up all night and work, and I just feel like I don't have any energy reserves anymore like I used to. I can't power through it. And she goes, oh. And she looks me over, kind of runs her hands over me, and she goes, oh, you don't. All your zing is gone. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? She goes, oh, zing. It's Chinese medicine. Jing is the, J-I-N-G, is the substance by which all life is derived, and you don't have any anymore. You've used it all up. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. She goes, oh, no, this is a fact. She says, what happens is you're born with a certain amount of zing. It's your energy reserves, and you draw on it during your lifetime when you need it. And once you use it, it's gone. And you don't get any more. And the Chinese believe that the secret to a good life is using, you have two kinds of Jing, your birthright Jing, and then the kind that you make every day through like healthy eating and sleeping and meditation. So they believe that the secret of a long life is to use the kind that you make every day and not use like the kind that you were born with and just save it. And so she tells me, oh, it's gone, you can't get any more. I'm like, what do you mean I can't get any more? And she's like, oh, no, your body's going to be totally dependent now on exercise, decent food, good night's sleep, and meditation. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. It is gone? It is totally gone? So I'm out there giving these sales seminars for people that could probably care less. I'm staying up till 2 in the morning wallpapering my bathroom, and I'm burning through my Jing so fast I'm surprised my aura isn't giving off smoke. And it's gone, and you don't get it back. So,
I've never heard of that.
Well, I hadn't either, and so that's why I'm seeing this. This is kind of like a public service announcement here. If you still have some, don't be burning through it, because then you'd be like me, and you have to have these wheatgrass smoothies every day. Who wants to live on that?
Yeah, but do you really think that's true?
Well, I do. I actually do, because... Okay. Because I can feel it. Because there used to be times when I gave seminars and I had little kids and I was traveling and I was so tired when I was given these seminars. And I put, in hindsight, I put way too much physical energy into them, into being entertaining and all, which is why now I do speaking. Because you only have to do that for like an hour. Seminar you can do for like 8 hours. So, but I used to do these seminars. And I remember standing in front of people and being so tired, I felt like my body split in two, and part of me was standing behind me, literally shoving me onto the stage, making me do a good job, you know, and being really animated.
Uh-huh.
And I remember when the people would leave at 5 o'clock, I remember one time someone came back in the room, and I had a reputation as I'm the one with the high energy, let's go, you know, funny all the time. And somebody came back in the room like they forgot their notebook or something, and I'm like Miss High Energy Trainer, and they come back, and like my head is down on the desk in this hotel banquet room. There's so much, so they come to me and they go, are you okay? But, and so I think I depleted my energy, because one of the things I've noticed now is I've got this client in Chicago, and sometimes I'll go up there for the day, and it's like the longest day of your life. You catch the 6 a.m. flight that gets you there at 7 because you got an hour time frame. So you can be in the meeting by 8 o'clock. You work all day. You go out to dinner. You come home on the 9 o'clock flight at night. And so you've got this 20-hour day, and I used to do that on a regular basis. And if I just got a little extra sleep the day after, I'd be okay. But now I do that, and I'm white for 3 days.
Yeah.
So it's not productive anymore.
Hmm.
I mean, it used to be I could do it, and if I slept till 8 the next morning, I'd be okay.
Uh-huh.
But now, if I do, I'm just, like, ruined my whole week. I'm like comatose.
Wow.
So I actually do think that that's true. I do think that I burned my Jing all up, and it's all gone. And
okay,
that,
so let me ask you a question, not to put you on the spot, but what would have happened if she didn't tell you about your Jing?
Oh, so you think now she told me, and now I've created
now
this.
Now it's manifested.
No, I asked her. I think she validated what I was already thinking, because I remember many times in my life feeling like I was reaching down into my gut and just saying, power it out, baby, just pull it out. You can do it. And then the second she said that, I went, that's what I was doing. That's exactly what I was doing, and I can't do it anymore. So actually, it did, you know, I mean, I went through a little mourning period over losing my Jing, because that's not something you want to take lightly. But what it did make me realize was how dependent I was on sleep and good nutrition.
Uh-huh.
And that my body was much more, I don't want to say fragile, but that I better get my sleep and get good nutrition if I have something big coming up. No staying up late the night before.
I see. Well, and, you know, that makes perfect sense, yeah.
Yeah, I heard Arianna Huffington speak. She and I spoke at this event, and that was one thing that she said that she's really learned about herself, is that to really get a good night's sleep before important things, because she talked about how especially men will have this, oh, I can live on 4 nights of sleep or 4 hours of sleep. I can, you know. And she, you know, she has that thick accent. And
yeah.
She says, yes, you are awake on 4 hours, but you'd be so much better if you had 8.
Better for us, anyway. I just thought that was a riot.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. Well, yeah, point well taken. You know, as we age, we do have to take better care of ourselves. You know, and I don't think that we really had that desire when we were younger. God knows I didn't. But now I have this desire to really take care of myself, build my energy up, and be the best I can be right now.
Right. Well, and when I was young, the thing I look back on, and I look back on how much of my energy reserves I wasted on things that were really not important.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I could argue some of the early morning flights I made, I probably would do that again because I wanted to be home the night before with my kids.
Uh-huh.
But what I wouldn't have done was stayed up till 2 in the morning making a Halloween costume the night before. That I could have given up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, let's, real quick, how is religion stealing our spirituality? Let's touch base on that because we've got 9 minutes.
Oh, yeah, 9 minutes. Okay. Sigmund Freud said that religion is, it protects us from individual neurosis by being kind of a social neurosis. And what happens in religion, and I should mention that I attend a church, and I am a former, or I should say, recovering church president.
Oh,
president of my church, my congregation for 2 years. But the way that I believe religion often steals our spirituality is it kind of follows a really typical path. People start a new religion because they feel very oppressed, and the religion they're in has all these rules and all these meaningless doctrines and these meaningless rituals, and so then they start their own deal because they want this closer connection to the divine. That's usually how religions start. Because these people want a closer connection to the divine, and this crew's not doing it right. So then they get this close connection to the divine, and then they set up these religious practices and all these rules. And then the next generation comes, and the next generation comes, and it means less and less and less. And it becomes about enforcing the rules. Because what happens is the leaders of religion often feel that it is their job to enforce the rules rather than live the rules.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing that happens, and I'm certainly guilty of this, is they don't have a lot of confidence in the rabble or the masses to assimilate the information and reach the same conclusion. There's always a real fear that if we allow them to go through a self-discovery process, that they will leave. And it's a lack of patience with the learning process because, I mean, you can look at anything like the Ten Commandments, and if you lived your life according to the Ten Commandments, you would have a really good life. They are really good things to follow if you apply them conceptually.
Uh-huh.
They are really excellent things to follow. But what happens is people take them really literally, and they try to enforce them on other people. I mean, an example of one of the commandments, and I'm certainly no biblical scholar, thou shalt have no other God but me. Well, it doesn't say you shouldn't have another religion. It just says there shouldn't be any other gods. It doesn't say anything about, and don't read any other book but this one.
That's right. That's right.
You know, so if you can really take those things more conceptually, which is, I believe, how they were intended, then they really are a path for a better life. And turning yourself over to something bigger than yourself and knowing that it's not all about you, that is one of the true secrets of being really happy. And one of the things that happens is people go through a self-discovery process and they realize that, but they don't have the patience to wait while other people go through that. They just want to enforce the rules.
Yeah.
They don't want, and that's what we parents do to our children all the time. You know, just do, I've learned this the hard way, just do it. Well, you know, there's really no other way to learn it but the hard way.
Yeah.
And so the answer to the question is religion stealing our spirituality? The answer is, in most cases, you better believe it is.
is not letting you get to your spirituality in the majority of the cases. But you know what? That's true. I mean, with the law of attraction, Jesus was an incredible teacher of the
right.
law of attraction. Incredible. Everything that we basically, all the teachers are talking about the law of attraction, it's basically coming from the teachings of Jesus and other religions.
Because if you look, when you get down to the conceptual ideas, they're, all the religions are the same.
Exactly.
And the reason they're all the same is because they're universal truths. And that's why they're all the same. It's our interpretation of them that gets us all bejungled up in our underwear.
Hence the wars. Everybody is saying, no, my religion knows better. I'm the chosen one. And it's really, they're fighting each other on the same thing.
Well, I really struggled. I grew up unchurched. And I was without a church for many, many years because I never could buy in to one church's, the principles all sounded good, but the principle of exclusivity, that theirs was right and the others were wrong. And I ended up, I'm a Unitarian, and I ended up becoming a Unitarian because we believe as Unitarians in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and that all of those religions are part of a larger story that we probably don't fully understand, and they're just all ways to make sense of the big picture, but they're all equally valid.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you.
I mean, how could your logical mind think anything else? God looked down and said, you know what? All those people over there with that darker skin, I think I'll send them to hell. But all those white people live in South Carolina, they look good. I'll choose them. They're getting in. I mean, it kind of defies logic, if nothing else.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's totally bizarre that people would think, isn't that funny? So annoying.
Well, and the thing, one of the things that I have really delighted in seeing in recent years is when I get, and I do live in the South, and so these discussions always come up about, well, so-and-so's not a Christian. Well, so-and-so's not this or not this. And I always wait for the right, perfect, opportune moment, and it's happened several times, to just say, well, you know, I think the important thing here to ask ourselves is, what would Jesus do? It's usually not what they're doing.
Very good, very good. That's right on target here. Oh, goodness. Well, we've got just a few moments left. Lisa, this has been an absolute delight having you on. I really am thrilled, too, because you put me in such a total different frame of mind.
Excellent.
Immediately, it's like, okay, I'm great now.
Well, that's my job. Well, actually, since we only have a couple minutes left, I actually want to. I don't usually do this, but yours is the kind of woo-woo show that get into this, which I mean that as a complete and total compliment. I want to read you one thing really quickly and see if this means to you, it was resonated with me. This is actually, and I'm supposed to be plugging my book, and you can get the book on the website, which is forgetperfect.com, and this is the way the book ends, the Finding Grace book. God is calling us to become the people we are capable of being. Grace isn't something you find outside of you. You've had it since the day you were born. It's the shining light of your soul, just waiting to be revealed. May we all find the grace to ignite the spark of divinity that resides within each and every one of us. And may we never let our own dirty laundry stand in our way.
How perfect.
Ta-da!
That is wonderful. Yes, now, listeners, go out there and get her books. You're going to absolutely delight. Her webpage, again, is www.forgetperfect.com. Or you can get her book on Amazon.com. Visit her webpage, though, because it's just as wonderful as what you just heard tonight. She's just colorful, just personality comes out in her website. It's wonderful. So finding grace when you can't even find clean underwear, go out and get that book. Lisa, it was wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you.
And
it was great.
Joy to everybody's lives.
Well, thank you. And don't forget, you got to include my husband and I on the big prosperity consciousness.
You got it. I'll send you an email on it.
Okay.
All right. And we will talk to everybody next week. Thank you, and we'll see you all.
You have been listening to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio, hosted by Jules Johnson. For more information, go to www.lawofattractiontools.com.